Welcome to Hallel Fellowship, found on the internet at hallel.info. That's hallel.info. We hope you are encouraged by the following recorded Bible study to look deeper into every word that proceeds from the mouth of God and how they were lived out in the life of Yeshua HaMashiach, often called Jesus the Christ.
The book of Deuteronomy, section Breyer, which is Deuteronomy chapter 11, starting in verse 26. It's chapter 11, 26, Deuteronomy through 16, 17. So Reyes goes from Deuteronomy 11, starting in verse 26, to 16, verse 17. See, I present before you today a blessing and a curse. This is Deuteronomy chapter 11, starting verse 26. Now we're in verse 27. The blessing that you hearken to the commandments of the Lord your God that I command you today, and the curse if you do not hearken to the commandments of the Lord your God, and you stray from the path I command you today to follow gods of others that you did not know. It should be that when the Lord your God brings you into land to which you come to possess it, then you should deliver the blessing on Mount Gerizim and the curse on Mount Ebal. Are they not on the other side of the Jordan, far in the direction of the sunset? In the land of the Canaanite that dwells in the plain, far from Gilgal, near the plains of Moreh? For you are crossing the Jordan to come to possess the land the Lord your God gives you. And you shall possess it, and you shall settle in it. You should be careful to perform all the decrees and the ordinances that I present to you today. Chapter 12. These are the decrees and the ordinances that you shall observe to perform in the land the Lord your God of your forefathers has given you, to possess it all the days that you live on the land. You shall utterly destroy all the places where the nations that you are driving away worshipped their gods, on the high mountains and on the hills, under every leafy tree. You shall break apart their altars, you shall smash their pillars, and their sacred trees shall you burn in the fire. Their carved images shall you cut down, and you shall obliterate their names from that place. You shall not do this to the Lord your God. Rather, only at the place the Lord your God will choose from among all your tribes to place his name, there shall you seek out his presence and come there. And there shall you bring your burnt offerings and feast offerings, your tithes, and what you raise up with your hand, your vow offerings, your freewill offerings, and the firstborn of your cattle and your flocks. You shall eat there before the Lord your God, and you shall rejoice with your every undertaking, you and your households, as the Lord your God has blessed you. You shall not do like everything that we do here today, every man what is proper in his own eyes. For you will not yet have come to the resting place or the heritage the Lord your God gives to you. You shall cross the Jordan and settle in the land the Lord your God causes you to inherit. He will give you rest from all your enemies all around you, and you will dwell securely. It shall be the place the Lord your God will choose to rest his name. There shall you bring everything that I command you, your burnt offerings, your feast offerings, your tithes, and what you raise up with your hands, and the choicest of your vow offerings that you will vow to the Lord your God. You shall rejoice for the Lord your God, you, your sons, your daughters, your slaves, your maidservants, and the Levite who is in your cities, for he has no share and inheritance with you. Beware for yourself, lest you bring up your burnt offerings in any place that you see, rather only in the place the Lord your God will choose among one of your tribes. There shall you bring up your burnt offerings, and there you shall do all that I command you. However, in your soul's desire, you may slaughter and eat meat according to the blessing the Lord your God will have given you in all your cities. The contaminated one and the pure one may eat it, like the deer in the heart. But you shall not eat the blood, you shall pour it out on the earth like water. In your outlying cities, you may not eat the tithe of your grain, and your wine and your oil, the firstborn of your cattle and your flocks, all your vow offerings that you vow and all your freewill offerings and what you will raise up with your hands. Rather, you shall eat them before the Lord your God in the place the Lord your God will choose. You, your son, your daughter, your slave, your maidservant, the Levite who is in your gates. And you shall rejoice for the Lord your God in all your every undertaking. Beware for yourself, lest you forsake the Levite all your days in your land. The Lord your God will broaden your boundary, as he spoke to you, and you say, I would eat meat. For you will have a desire to eat meat, to your heart's entire desire may you eat meat. If the place the Lord your God will choose to place his name will be far from you, you may slaughter from your cattle, from your flocks, the Lord your God has given you, as I commanded you, and you may eat it in your cities according to your heart's entire desire. Even as the heart, the deer and the hart are eaten, so you may you eat it. The contaminated one and the pure one may eat it together. Only be strong not to eat the blood, for the blood is its life. And you shall not eat the life with the meat. You shall not eat it. You shall pour it out on the ground like water. You shall not eat it, in order that it will be dwell with you and your children after you, when you do what is right in the eyes of the Lord. Only your sanctities that you will have and your vow offerings you will carry, and come to the place the Lord your God will choose. You shall perform your burnt offerings, the flesh and the blood, upon the altar of the Lord your God. And the blood of your feast offerings shall be poured upon the altar of the Lord your God, and you shall eat the flesh then. Safeguard and hearken to all these words I command you, in order to be well with you and your children after you forever, when you do what is good and right in the eyes of the Lord your God. The Lord your God will cut down the nations to which you come to take possession from them before you, and you shall take possession from them and settle in their land. Beware for yourself, lest you be attracted after them, and after them they have been destroyed before you, lest you seek out their gods, saying, how do these nations worship their gods? And even I will do the same. You shall not do so, to the Lord your God, for everything that is in abomination to the Lord that he hates, that have they all done to their gods. For even their sons and their daughters have they burned in the fire to their gods. Chapter 13. The entire word that I command you, that shall you observe to do, you shall not add to it, you shall not subtract from it. If there should stand up in your midst a prophet or a dreamer of dreams, and he will produce to you a sign or wonder, and the sign of the wonder comes about of which he spoke to you, saying, let us follow the gods of others that you did not know, and that we shall worship them. Do not hearken to the words of that prophet, or the dreamer of dreams. The Lord your God is testing you that you to know whether you love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul. The Lord your God shall you follow, him shall you fear, his commandments shall you observe, and to his voice you hearken. Him shall you serve, and to him shall you cleave. And that prophet, that dreamer of dreams, shall put to death. For he had spoken perversion against the Lord your God, who takes you out of the land of Egypt, who redeems you from the house of slavery, to make you stray from the path which the Lord your God has commanded you to go. And you shall destroy the evil from your midst. If your brother and the son of your mother, or the son of your daughter, or the wife of your bosom, or your friend who is like your own soul, will entice you secretly, saying, let us go and worship the gods of others, that you did not know, you nor your fathers, from the gods, the peoples that are all around you, those near to you, or those far from you, from one end of the earth to the other end of the earth, you shall not accede to him, and shall not hearken to him. Your eyes shall not take pity on him. You shall not be compassionate, nor conceal him. But they shall surely kill him, your hands will be the first against him to kill him, and the hand of the entire people afterwards. You shall pelt him with stones, and he shall die, for he sought to make you stray from near the Lord your God, who takes you out of Egypt from the house of slavery. All Israel shall hear and fear, and they shall not again do such an evil thing in your midst. If in one of your cities, the Lord your God gives to you, to which you dwell, you hear someone saying, lawless men have emerged from your midst, and they have caused the dwellers of their city to go astray, saying, let us go worship the gods of others that you have not known. You shall seek out and investigate and inquire well, and behold, if it is true, the word is correct, this abomination was committed in your midst, you shall surely smite the inhabitants of that city with the edge of the sword. Lay it waste, and everything that is in it, and its animals, with the edge of the sword. You shall gather together all of its booty to the midst of its open square. You shall burn in fire completely the city and all its booty to the Lord your God, and it shall be an eternal heap. It shall not be rebuilt. No part of the banned property may adhere to your hand. The Lord your God will turn back from his burning wrath. He will give you mercy and will be merciful to you and multiply you, as he swore to your forefathers, when you hearkened the voice of your God, the Lord, to serve all of his commandments that I command you today, to do what is right in the eyes of the Lord your God. 14. You are the children of the Lord your God. You shall not cut yourselves, you shall not make bald spots in your eyes for a dead person. For you are a holy people, the Lord your God, and the Lord has chosen you for himself to be a treasured people from among all the peoples of the face of the earth. You shall not eat any abomination. These are the animals that you may eat: the ox, the sheep, the goat, the hart, the deer, the yachmur, the ako, the dishon, the tiao, and the zamir. Every animal that has a split hoof, which is completely separated in two hooves, that brings up its cud among the animals, it you may eat. But this you shall not eat from among those that bring up their cud or have a completely separated split hoof: the camel, the hare, the hyrax. For they bring up their cud, but their hoof is not split. They are unclean to you. The pig, for it has a split hoof, but not the cud, it is unclean to you. From their flesh you shall not eat. You shall not touch their carcasses. This you may eat: everything that is in the water, anything that has fins and scales you may eat. Anything that does not have fins or scales you shall not eat. It is unclean to you. Every clean bird you may eat. This is what you shall not eat from among them: the Nashir, the Perez, the Ozna, the Ra, the Ayah, the Daya, according to its kind. Evi Orev, according to its kind. The Bas Hayana, the Takmos, the Shakaf, the Nets, according to its kind. The Kos, the Ansuf, and the Tinshmes. The Kaz, the Rachma, and the Salah. The Chasida, the Anaf, according to its kind, the Duchvas, and the Talif. Every flying, swimming creature is unclean to you. They shall not be eaten. Every clean bird you may eat. You shall not eat any carcass to the stranger who is in your cities, shall you give it to that he may eat it, or sell it to a Gentile. For you are a holy people to the Lord your God. You shall not cook a kid in its mother's milk. You shall tithe the entire crop of your planting, the produce of the field, year by year, shall you eat before the Lord your God in the place that he will choose to rest his name there. The tithe of your grain, your wine, and your oil, the firstborn of your cattle and of your flocks, that you will learn to fear the Lord your God all your days. It will be too long for you, so that you cannot carry it, because the place the Lord your God will choose to place his name there is far from you. The Lord your God will have blessed you so. Then you may exchange it for money, wrap up the money in your hand, and go to the place the Lord your God will choose, as you may spend the money for whatever your soul desires: for cattle, for flocks, for wine, for alcoholic beverage, or anything that your soul wishes. You shall eat it there before the Lord your God and rejoice, you and your household. You shall not forsake the Levite who is in your cities, for he has no portion or inheritance with you. At the end of 3 years, you'll take out every tithe of your crop in that year and set it down within your cities. Then the Levite can come, for he has no portion or inheritance with you. The proselyte, the orphan, and the widow who are in your cities, so that they may eat and be satisfied, in order that the Lord your God will bless you in all your handiwork that you may undertake. Chapter 15. At the end of 7 years, you shall institute a remission. This is the matter of the remission. Every creditor shall remit his authority over what he has lent his fellow. He shall not press his fellow or his brother, for he has proclaimed a remission for the Lord. You may press the Gentile, but over what you have with your brother you shall remit your authority. However, may there be no destitute among you. Rather, the Lord will surely bless you in the land the Lord your God will give you, as an inheritance possess it. Only if you will hearken, Lord your God, to observe, to perform this entire commandment that I command you today. The Lord your God has blessed you, for he has told you, you will lend to many nations, but you will not borrow. And you will dominate many nations, but they will not dominate you. If there shall be a destitute person among you, any of your brethren in all your cities, in your land the Lord your God gives you, you shall not harden your heart or close your hand against your destitute brother. Rather, you shall open your hand to him. You shall lend him his requirement, whatever is lacking to him. Beware, lest there be a lawless thought in your heart, saying, seventh year approaches, the remission of the year. And you will look malevolently upon your destitute brother and refuse to give him. Then he may appeal against you to the Lord your God, and it will be a sin upon you. You shall surely give him, and let your heart not feel bad when you give to him. For in return for this matter, the Lord your God will bless you in all your deeds and all your every undertaking. For the destitute people will not cease to exist within the land. Therefore I command you, saying, you shall surely open your hands to your brother, to your poor, and to your destitute in the land. If your brother, a Hebrew man or a Hebrew woman, will be sold to you, he shall serve to you for 6 years. The seventh year you shall send him away from you free. When you send him away from you free, you should not send him away empty-handed. Adorn him generously from your flocks, from your threshing floor, from your wine cellar. As Lord your God has blessed you, so shall you give to him. If you remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, the Lord your God redeemed you. Therefore, I command you regarding this matter today. In the event that he will say to you, I will not leave you, for he loves you and your household, for it is good for him with you, then you shall take the awl, put it through his ear and the door, and he shall be for you an eternal slave. Even to your maidservant shall you do the same. It shall not be difficult in your eyes when you send him away free from you. For twice the wage of a hired hand, 6 years, has he served you. Lord your God will bless you in all that you do. Every firstborn male that is born in your cattle and your flock, you shall sanctify the Lord your God. You shall not work with the firstborn of your ox, nor shall you shear the firstborn of your flock. For Lord your God shall you eat it year by year. In the place the Lord your God will choose you and your household. If it shall have a blemish, a lameness, or blindness, or any serious blemish, you shall not slaughter it, Lord your God. In your cities shall you eat it, the contaminated one and the pure one alike, like the deer and the hart. However, you shall not eat its blood. You shall pour it out on the ground like water. Chapter 16. You shall observe the month of springtime and perform the Pesach offering, the Lord your God. For in the month of springtime, the Lord your God took you out of the land of Egypt at night. You shall slaughter the Pesach offering to the Lord your God from the flock and also offer the cattle in the place where the Lord your God will rest his name. You shall not eat leavened bread with it. For 7 days you shall eat matzot, because of it, bread of affliction. For you departed to the land of Egypt in haste. so that you will remember the day of your departure from the land of Egypt all the days of your life. No leaven of yours shall be seen throughout your boundary for 7 days, nor shall any flesh of that which you slaughtered on the afternoon before the first day of remain overnight until morning. You may not slaughter the Pesach offering in one of your cities the Lord your God gives you, except at that place the Lord your God will choose to rest his name. There shall you slaughter the Pesach offering in the afternoon when the sun descends, the appointed time of your departure from Egypt. You shall roast it and eat it in the place the Lord your God will choose. In the morning you may turn back and go to your tents. For a 6-day period you shall eat matzot, and on the 7th day there shall be an assembly of the Lord your God. You shall not perform labor. You shall count 7 weeks for yourselves, from when the sickle first is put to the standing crop, that you shall begin to count 7 weeks. Then you shall observe the festival of Shavuot, the Lord your God. The voluntary offerings that you give should be commensurate with how much the Lord your God will have blessed you. You shall rejoice with the Lord your God, you, your son, your daughter, your slave, your maidservant. The Levite is in your gates, the proselyte, the orphan, the widow who are among you. In the place the Lord your God will choose to rest his name, you shall remember that you were a slave in Egypt. You shall observe and perform these decrees. You shall make the festival Sukkot for a 7-day period when you gather in from your threshing floor and from your wine cellar. You shall rejoice on your festival, you, your son, your daughter, your slave, your maidservant. The Levite, the proselyte, the orphan, and the widow who are in your cities. A 7-day period shall you celebrate the Lord your God in the place the Lord your God will choose. The Lord your God will have blessed you in all your crop and all your handiwork, and you will completely be joyous. 3 times a year, all your males should appear before the Lord your God in the place he will choose. On the festival of Matzot, the festival of Shavuot, the festival of Sukkot, he shall not appear before the Lord your God empty-handed. Everyone according to what he can give, according to the blessing the Lord your God gives to you. That was Deuteronomy, chapter 11, verse 26 through 16, verse 17. I know there's a few questions. I'm sure we'll get to most of them. Can't swear all of them. Any comments, things you want answered as best I can answer before I go my own spiel about this? Yes.
I forget his name. Jared, was telling me we're allowed to eat duck, geese, right? And what was that other bird we were talking about? Because I like duck. And then somebody told me that duck is unclean. And I said, well, I'm going to eat it until I figure that out. And it turns out it wasn't unclean. So is that right?
Well, we'll discuss that. We can discuss that. Yeah, there's debate because in the terms of what birds it rattles off being clean or unclean, it rattles off a number of them, but doesn't rattle off every bird. As you note, the flamingo is not included. A lot of birds are not included. There's a particular word here. If I see, find it real quick. It is creeping thing, stork, heron. I don't have a list here up top. It's a term they use for water birds. Anyway. They don't know for certain what the word means. Some your Bibles translate the word as swan. Some translate it as pelican. There's various other words. It's listed in different places regarding what are clean birds, what are unclean birds. There is a world of difference between a pelican and a swan, right? They're not the same bird. They're unrelated, no variations. So what some people tried to figure out, because they don't know what the word means, whether it was pelican or whether it meant swan, they said, well, to play it safe, all water birds, whether it's pelican or swan or duck or geese or any water bird, they wiped out every water bird, don't eat any water birds at all. They didn't know what the word meant. And because we don't know what it means, it's hard to say. Now, the pelican, as we mentioned before, is very different than the swan, as so was a duck or anything else. And note to mention, the flamingo is not included either. Well, these water birds, there are a lot of water birds that are not listed here at all. What we have to figure out is, It's the family kind or the whole type or category is what it isolates down to. You'll note the chicken is not listed here either as being clean. Nowhere is it listed. Nor is a turkey. They're not listed either. The only bird the Bible ever talks about as being clean bird are doves and quail. Those are the only two types of birds the Bible ever talks about as being clean or edible birds. Well, humans figure out, okay, if the quail is clean, then any bird like the quail is probably clean too. Hence, the chicken, which is included, and the turkey, which is included. There's a few other birds too. There's a peafowl that's also included, and various other game hens. They said, oh, well, if the quail is clean, then anything in this category is probably clean. The Bible does talk about songbird eggs. It says, okay, songbirds are probably the songbird category. Well, again, quail is actually part of a songbird category too. It does have a chirping sound, chirping noise. But songbirds are obviously much smaller. Finches. Yeah, you need a lot of them to eat. That's true. But songbirds are also considered clean. And dove category, all the doves are clean, which, yes, unfortunately includes pigeons or flying rats. They are part of the dove category. I'm not kidding you. It's kind of gross. What they determined is there are certain birds that their internal category, internal parts are different. They said, all right, well, again, this is man's logic and reasoning, what man had created. So to include all doves, that includes pigeons too, because pigeons are part of the dove family. Just like chickens are part of the category of family of the quail. So I can't tell you whether they're right or whether they're wrong. Just what men have decided. Does it make sense? So if you determine, you believe that a duck or a goose or a swan is not considered part of the pelican type water birds, and that's clean to you, then there's no one on earth who can prove you wrong. Now, if you think otherwise, that it is unclean, there's no one on earth who can prove you wrong. You can't. There is enough category of openness to figure it out. The few clean birds rattled off, there's a certain characteristics they spotted amongst human beings, that's noticed amongst them, that are different than ones that are unclean. For example, eating, how the bird eats. Does a bird eat while it's flying? Does it eat while it's standing still? Right. How would you know? You'd observe the birds, find out. All songbirds eat standing still. All quail eat standing still. All chickens, turkeys, eat standing still. They can't fly and eat at the same time. Other birds, which are in the category which are unclean, not all, they can fly and eat. Seagull, for example. How many of you throw a piece of something in the seagull, have a seagull catch it? We all did that, right? It's really fun, right? Because, oh, how, can they catch it or not? It's the fun part. Seagulls eat and swallow while they're flying. They don't have to stand still. Seagull, because it was unclean. Next category is, when they consume food, the bird consumes food, what does it do or how does it eat it? Most of the songbirds, as well as the ground-dwelling birds like chickens and turkeys and quail, they'll eat rocks. And they have what humans call a gizzard. I will misspell this, so forgive me. I have no idea how to spell the word gizzard. I'm guessing. It's close. So, and the gizzard is a muscle inside the bird's body that is a contracting muscle. Inside of it contains small rocks and small pebbles. It also contains the seeds they eat. And as the muscle contracts, it crushes and cracks the seeds, allowing the bird to eat them or consume them. Otherwise, the seed would go right through and poop out the other end. That's a different... That can be, but the migration is also, a lot of birds migrate too, which are not part of this clean bird category. There's also the last one, I forgot what it was. It was what they eat, their gizzard, and... Oh, right, predatory, thank you. whether they eat other critters, other animals. So predatory vulture style. Are they hunters? Are they scavengers? That type of category. So if a bird fails, does not eat properly according to what other birds eat, either songbird or the ground-dwelling birds, or does not have a gizzard to consume rocks, Or it's a predatory bird. It hunts things or eats dead or die, like carrion type of birds. Those beaks that are unclean. If it does eat seeds and it eats standing still as it consumes its food, as well as it has rocks as a gizzard which it consumes, it doesn't have breaks classified as a clean bird. Again, these are all creations of men. God did not list them out. So can I tell you they're right or wrong? Nope. I tell you what isn't right to eat. Vultures, owls, buzzards, falcons. We know what isn't clean, but I can't guarantee what is. Does it make sense? Right. I pray that we didn't make a mistake. Any questions or comments so far? Yes.
So that's what I was asking. I'll hold it. Oh,
it's on.
My neck hurts like that. I'm sorry, but if I hold it up like that, my neck hurts. So the characteristics of the clean birds is like the cow, is the things it chews its cuds. Just like us, we're supposed to take the word, masticate it. These are the characteristics of the clean birds. They have gizzards.
Their body continues to reprocess the food like the clean, like chewing a cud. This gizzard is a lot like a cud
in a rudiment animal. With the fish.
It's a similar type of process.
The fish has fins and scales. So there must be some similarities that we don't understand.
Possibly.
Yet.
I think it has
to do with chewing the cud like we're supposed to do, like on the Word of God. We're supposed to take it and chew
That's
on it.
That's a fair symbolism. I don't know.
Okay. So, but then all the birds with the gizzards and things would be fair to say that
they're probably clean. They're probably clean.
Oh, okay.
Animals.
That's
probably clean animals. I can't guarantee it, but probably.
But I think we have common sense that says, okay, thanks.
Some of us have their own opinions and beliefs. So we have to be tolerant of variations and opinions on what is, isn't acceptable to each of us. Yes, Jeff.
And probably the wisest thing is to hold tightly to the explicit and hold loosely onto the implicit.
That's fair.
And the explicit are the things that are actually mentioned there. The implicit are whatever you sort of come up with.
Yep. Yes, next question. Go ahead.
I do have a question about when you're cooking your food. Some people think that if there's any pink in the meat, that it's bloody and un-Torah-like. And I think most people don't understand the difference between when an animal's slaughtered and the blood is out, and it can be cooked in different degrees without eating blood. So if you could really get on that, that would be very helpful. Because really, if people see pink, they flip out and get really like, wow, you're disobeying the Torah and absolutely won't eat food.
Blood consists of two proteins, hema and globin. One is a persistent protein that lasts after the person's dead, still there. And the globin vanishes and disappears quickly after someone dies. Quickly meaning within a few months or a few years, the globin is decomposed into nothingness. It's no longer traceable. So, blood contains both items. Both are red. I don't know which one you have. Depends what you got. So when you cut or slaughter an animal and blood comes out, you have a mixture of hema and globin inside that blood that's pouring out. We're referring to clean animals. I know that there are some other insects and have the different and other animals that may not, their blood may be red. I'm not worried about those. We're in clean animals only. So hemoglobin is what the blood's going to contain. So when you're spilling blood, you're spilling those items. The red stuff still left in the meat will have some elements of this still in it because blood carries proteins, nutrients as to and from and also toxins from all the cells of your body. The lymph system is engaged there too, but I won't go with the lymph system. So whether or not you cook the meat completely and make sure there's no pink or redness left in it or not, that is your decision. That's what you choose to do. When you're spilling the blood, there's a reason why we call koshering meat. I mean, who knows what koshering meat means? What does that mean? That's how you kosher slaughter. How do you kosher meat after it's been slaughtered?
Salt.
Salt. What does salt do? It sucks everything out. There's nothing left. You only want to eat it after in some cases. So salt does. Have you had salt on a cut on a wound you have? What does it do? It hurts. It stings. It's killing everything in there, killing the bacteria as well, and sucking out all the good stuff inside the cells are still alive, which is why you feel pain, because all the cells are still alive saying, hey, I'm dying. This salt's killing me. When we kosher, this is not to mean, oops, ER. This is not kosher slaughter. When you kosher a meat product, you are putting salt on it. Now, does the Bible say you shall put salt on your meat? No, it does not. This is a man-made determination. We said, hey, when we put salt on meat and let it sit there for a while, what does it do? It pulls all the stuff out. And what's left? Is it any hema or globin left? No. The meat's still pink, though. So when you kosher it, you've pulled all the blood out. However, it's still the color of pink. It's still the color of flesh. That's the color of meat. It's pink. Blood alone is not the only thing that gives muscle its color. The cells in the muscle also have their own color, independent of the blood that goes to and from them. Blood does not go inside of a cell. It can't. It doesn't fit. It's too big. Blood cells are too large to do that. But lymph fluid passes through and from cells all the time. Lymph is clear in color. And koshering salt will pull either one of them out. So to play it safe, some people choose to avoid, to make sure they don't have any hemoglobin left in it. They kosher their meat. Whether or not it was slaughtered properly or not, or bled properly or not, you may or may not know. But this part you do know. You can make sure you don't eat the blood in your own methods. You can also well done or cook your meat thoroughly. What happens to meat when you cook it? Yeah, it shrinks and gets smaller. Have you ever overcooked a steak? What happens? It was this big, now it's this big. What came out of it? Every fluid, every oil, every amount of blood or any kind of protein left in it, it all gets sucked out. Because the contraction, those muscles, those cells that get heated, they contract and they squeeze everything they have in them out of it. Makes it hard to eat, it turns into charcoal. But still, that's what's left. So you can cook meat completely and accomplish the same effect. Which means all the blood of it gets completely cooked out. What you choose to do, that is your business. It's not mine.
The question is, if the meat was koshered and you didn't fully cook it till it's like dead, it's not sinning, right?
I cannot tell you for certain what is or isn't, but a kosher slaughter means the life of the animal is poured out on the ground. It's been removed and it's not consumable. So I believe haggis will be banned.
I don't eat meat that is usually cooked. I usually cook it through. But I don't cook it till it's dry and icky.
And that's a decision that each person has to make on your own.
But sometimes the meat is still pink, but it's thoroughly cooked and I always salt it.
It may be. No, blood isn't pink. Blood's red. It's reddish color. Or it can be slightly blue if it's on the return site. Blue in the veins, but red in the arteries. Right. In or out. So blood isn't pink, it's red. So there's a different color tone when you will see it. Although I have, oh, this is dark. Guess what? It isn't pink. What is it? Take a guess. So you can determine by just looking at it what it is or what it isn't. Does that make sense? Any questions about blood? Yes. Anything else? I'm happy to change topics. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, happy is he tells us many times to rejoice.
Yes.
So does that... Do you know what that word is? Does it mean to celebrate or does it mean be happy?
Both. We rejoice for the Lord. The term being rejoice, the holy days are all rejoiceful events. He's asking, does it mean celebrate or does it mean to be happy? Well, it's both, because when you celebrate, you're supposed to be happy, and vice versa. When you're happy, you're supposed to celebrate. God is expecting or anticipating all people who, because the whole point is you are in His presence, right? Who wouldn't be happy in God's presence? We'd all be happy in God's presence, right? That's the whole point. You should be worshiping or praising Him in His presence. You're happy to be there. At the same time, you're rejoicing or celebrating too because you are there. You're in God's presence. That's kind of partial to the idea. They kind of go hand in hand as far as being isolated themselves. Now, is a rejoiceful person unhappy? Sure? Maybe. Maybe depression. Are they rejoiceful? Maybe we're not. So to me personally, I tie them because I can't celebrate and be rejoiceful and unhappy personally. That's not within me. I'm all or I'm nothing. I don't split well. So I'm all in or I'm all out. So to me, they're tied together. And some of you may split. I don't split. I'm a one-tracked mind person. I do one thing, I do really well, and two things, I do them both poorly. So that's how it works for me. So I combine them as a rejoice and celebration is the same thing, as tied together, because that's how I live my life. I can't swear that you all do it, but that's how I do it. Any other questions or comments? We'll discuss more about the activities of rejoicing and celebration shortly, because there's a lot more to it than I just rattle off to you. Because it's written that rejoice for the Lord when he places his name and the holy days. Any comments or questions? Anything else? Yes.
So 13:2.
Hold on, I'm going to find it. 13.
He's talking about the prophets and
the sign, wonders past. Yeah, we spoke to you. Okay, go ahead.
So, I mean, if the prophet is telling us, come on, let's go worship these idols, it's so blatant and obvious, you know, who would consider that?
Right.
So is he talking about something else, something more subtle and devious?
Both, actually, to be fair. Sure, both. Because certain individuals may respond to, oh, that looks fun. That looks pretty. Cool, let's go do that. And others are more subtle, like, no, I'm smarter than that. And but the prophet may say, well, yes, we're worshiping the same God, but let's do it this way. It's good too. Ah, that's the more subtle way. You're doing it in a manner in which God said, don't worship me in this manner. The prophet may, you know, be telling you great things, good stories, good information, blah, blah, blah. But if he misdirects how you do something, he can misdirect it again. And then again. Then again. Before you know it, hey, God's way over there. What happened to me? So the subtle ways are also addressed here too, are just as important as the overt, hey, God of Molech, let's go kill our kids, everybody. The two different ways, the more obvious and the more subtle way of, well, God really doesn't mind that Sunday is your worship. It's fine. Or God really doesn't mind that Christmas, that he really understands your heart. God really doesn't mind that Easter, God really doesn't mind Halloween. But now you've gone through the process of walking further and further back to where God said, I'm not there, come back over here, hello. And you say, what? Ignore that voice. I'm doing this new stuff now. So you can do a subtle way of getting there, incremental steps. Or you can do the whole jump as fast as you can, as far as you can go, which is a more rebellious route. Yes, Larry.
You know, you can make it real simple by saying, thou shalt not add to nor subtract,
subtract
from.
Yes. He rattles that off a couple of times, a couple of different ways. That, yeah, don't add, don't subtract, don't alter what I've done. And he also mentions a couple of times here in this section that God does not want us to worship him in the manner in which people worship their other gods. So if somebody chooses to worship their God in some fashion over here, we are not to take that fashion, that style, and bring it upon ourselves. And we'll use the same style and worship our God the same way, but a different God. You can't just relabel the God and do the same technique. It doesn't work that way. God specified what he wanted done and how he wanted it done. No intermixing and shuffling around and having multiple decks of cards with like 12 aces in it. It doesn't work that way. You have to get what God gave you this way, nothing else. There's more to that. Any other questions or comments? Yes, Rose.
My Bible says maidservant or manservant.
Yes.
And you, in your Bible, it says slave.
Slave is a masculine term in Hebrew.
Slave. Are we allowed to have slaves?
I don't believe our laws allow that.
No, I'm
you
talking.
You double check California
talking,
laws. Pretty sure they're pretty.
Did God? Did God allow?
Oh yeah.
Them to have slaves?
Yes, they did. Yeah.
They didn't get a wage.
No, no wages. Not while you're serving.
Huh.
You want to explain slavery, biblical slavery to you? Yeah. We'll get there. I can do it now, I guess. It doesn't make much difference. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff online regarding slavery and what it means and how God views it. It's not how we think of slavery necessarily. We've rattled this off many times. So, slavery. Is it slavery? there's biblical and then there's everybody else. The biblical slavery, almost no one ever did. Because it was too kind to the slave. It was too easy for them to get away and do whatever they wanted to. If you injured your slave in a permanent fashion, what happens? Slave goes free. That includes scars. So if you, we've heard this before, whipped your slave with a whip, does it leave a permanent mark? It can. What happens if it does? He's free. Whoops, don't want to hit the slave too hard. If you knock your slave, as I mentioned before, knock the tooth of your slave out by accident. You were hoeing, he got too close. Oh, I'm sorry. Guess what? Slave goes free. So, if you cause any permanent injury that caused a physical problem, the slave goes free. If you accidentally kill the slave, it's not intentional, you are not executed because he was your property. It's not an execution. It was an accidental killing, but it's not an execution. You'll get put in prison for the rest of your life. It was an accidental killing. But there's still a trial to determine what happened and whether it was accidental or intentional or not. So that's not a free case. But there are a lot of things that set the slave free. If the slave serves you for at most 6 years, what happens? Slave goes free. They get 6 years. Now, at the end of 6 years in Deuteronomy, which we'll talk about this more detailed shortly from now, you also have to pay him when he goes free. Pay him what? Your food, which includes your flocks, your any animals you've been producing, if you're egg grower, your eggs, wheat or grain, wine, freely give. Why? Because for the 6 years he served you for free, he was doing more than what a servant does. What does a servant do? Well, I'll give you my 8 hours, I'm going home. There's a servant. 8 hours a day, union, job, whatever it would be, servant goes free. You pay him. Yeah, you pay him a lot of money. If I call a servant up and say, hey, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, will you go do this for me? So I don't get start the clock till 10. I'll call you when it's 10. What does a slave do? Yes, sir. So the slave's worth more because they're on call all the time. Ah, there are a couple of ways which slavery was established with this process. To gain a slave. Oh, by the way, slaves, you are to teach. You have to teach them. You have to instruct them how to read, how to write, how to function and do things. Otherwise, you are treating the slave as you would your fellow man. So there's requirements. There is no uneducated slaves here in biblical times. So slavery, how you get a slave, you can buy them, is the most common way, or capture. Capture in the form of battle of war. The war took place between this country and that country. The ones that were survivors, the refugees, they are considered, they're doled out as captured slaves. So this is what you use a war. It depends on what you do with them. This is how long you keep them. If you leave them uneducated and they choose to stay as Gentiles, meaning not observing your holy days, your laws, anything about you, you can keep them their entire lives. If you educate them and they say, hey, I like your God, oops, for you, after 6 years, they go free. See, it's up to the slave's choice to say, hey, do I want to continue on in my own ethnicity, my own philosophy, my own way of life? Or will I follow my master's instructions and how he lives his life? If I choose to follow my master's instructions, I become a proselyte. I am no longer a slave. I now become a brother to my master. I become part of Israel. And as a result, all of this applies to me too. So if you are a slave, it is in your best interest to say, okay, master, of slave of someone from Israel, teach me what you have to say, and I will learn it. And then I have, at most, 6 years to wait before, assume I go through the conversion process, I am then part of you and I am part of your people. Now, I have to make a verbal commitment to do that, of course, and be serious about it, not some underhanded, snide, you know, stealing way of doing it. The master is not an idiot, I assume, as he is a master. To go through this process. So the nature of slavery is designed to be a temporary one unless the slave chooses otherwise. The slave can choose, as an Israelite, yes, I know I can go free for 6 years, but I'm choosing to not to. I want to stay here and work with you. Or the slave can say, I wish to remain a Gentile and not be part of your people. Either way, the slave will stay as your property possession until the slave dies. Well, mostly dies. The year of Jubilee, the 50th year, even the ones that want to stay with you forever, usually goes free too. It's not so bad. Now, where do we get this symbolism from? What? How does God use this symbolism? Are all of us slaves? Yes. What are we slaves to? God, Messiah. Do you want to go free?
No.
So what would he do to you? Pierce your ear. Yeah, pierce your ear. As you are then marked as belonging to him. The idea of slavery is not such a bad or evil thing as people assume it is in our culture and many cultures. Because we do what human did from slavery, but what man does is a complete bastardization of everything God ever intended. So we're very, very, very different. Now, obviously, our current laws do not allow slavery. That's our current state laws, federal laws, most laws of the world. They're all slaves, all wiped out. And which is fine. Nothing wrong with that. It's not command you have to have a slave. This is sort of when you did have one. Maybe people did not own one, didn't buy one, didn't have the authority to get one. Now let's go to the other category of how you would buy a slave. You're right. The most common way is debt. So if a slave got into debt, a person gets into debt, and they can't pay it back. So let's say I borrowed $5 million from Joe, and I came back, he said, okay, pay it back. We'll give you 6 weeks to pay it all back. Come back, you know, I went gambling, I have $4 left. Here. What's going to happen? Well, he would say, bring me to court. He borrowed $5 million. He kept all before. He owes it back. Here's the deadline. Here's how it works. And the court would say, Daniel, do you have the remaining balance available to you? I would say, yes or no. And the court would say, well, we can sell all your assets and see what that's worth. And Joe may accept that as payment. They say assets were short. They are, by the way, in case you were curious. So assets didn't accumulate enough to pay the debt. The court can order me sold to pay the debt. Now, I can be sold to Joe. Joe wouldn't say, I will buy him, in which case it's free, meaning that you will then take me in place of the debt. We have an example of that in, I believe it's Elijah? Elijah, I think it's the one with the oil. That her husband in debt, the creditor comes and said, well, he's dead. I'm going to take your two sons and place the debt, right? And that's how you would exchange it. And the debt has to be paid. So in that case, that was an example of what this would look like. Well, if assuming he didn't want to keep me, maybe he wanted to sell me instead. If they say I was worth the remaining $4,990,000, I'm not. But say if he thought I was, he'd get that much money from me. He could sell me and somebody else could buy me and then I would work for them for 6 years, up to 6 years, depending on how the year of release when that happens to land in the time cycle. But that's between Joe's decision and the court's decision on what happens to me because I took all the money from him. Does that make sense? So a slave can be bought. In this instance, a court can order the person sold in a court, a trial, or I can sell myself as the next option. Selling myself for labor. Now, selling myself also includes selling my children because they're part of me too. Selling myself or selling children. I can't sell my wife.
Well, she's not going to
feed you. Oh, no, but I can't sell her. But selling my children. she can go to her father's household while I'm in sale too. It's an option for her. And my children can do as well. They can choose that as well. I can sell my child as a slave. Let's say I have some massive debt and I can't pay it. I sell my child off to somebody willing to buy my child for this price tag to pay the debt. The child goes free after 6 years. So if I sell them a 4-year-old child, are they going to buy it? Probably not. Who's going to buy a 4-year-old child? It takes them 4 years to figure out how to do anything. By then, you have to get rid of them. they're not worth much, hence a few dollars. If I sell a 20-year-old, or sorry, I can't sell 20, a 19-year-old child, that's worth money. That's useful. I can't sell 20, they're an adult, but 19 I can sell. So I can sell children. If I sell a daughter and she is of age to marry, it is not the same as a daughter who is not of age to marry. If I sell a daughter who is, example, 4 years old, she will be a maidservant until 6 years go by. She's 10. She goes free. If I sell a daughter that's eligible for marriage, let's say a 16 to 19-year-old daughter, I am selling her knowing she may be married off during the time which she is working for this individual, either to himself, he may choose to marry her, he may choose to sell, marry her off to his son, or to one of his own slaves, give her as wife. He can do that. She's of the age to do that. In which case, if the 6 years go by, she is now attached to her husband, too. It's not her going free. Its whole family has to go free. If her husband says, no, I'm staying here, but guess what? She's staying there, too, because she's the wife. So, depending on what you're doing, dictates how this all works. Is she mistreated? No. What happens if you're mistreated? You go free. This isn't abuse. This isn't a rape. This is a... She treated you would a normal, ordinary slave. Yes.
So the girl didn't want to marry whoever it was that they wanted her to marry.
You are someone's property. You've been sold. So you don't have much choice.
You don't have a choice.
That's fine.
What's the alternative?
I would run away.
Run away. Sure. Yeah. Don't go into debt. There's your parents saying, hey, let's not borrow the $5 billion from Joe. I can borrow $5 from Joe. Hey, I can afford that, right? I'll pay him $5 back. There's a big difference. So if the parent's foolish enough to go into massive debt, this is a problem. Sometimes you don't have a choice in the matter. You're starving. You and your family are starving. I have no food. I can't feed my kids. What do I do with them? Well, I can keep them and let them die, or I can sell one as a slave, get some food to feed the rest of my family, or whatever the circumstances may be. It's not always so simple. Yes, Jeff.
Well, it's kind of interesting. We have a more enlightened time now in that, you know, if you have debt and you get a judgment against you, they attach your wages.
Yep.
Then you have a hard time feeding yourself and...
You borrow more.
Yeah, you have a hard time surviving. So you can either get a roof above your head to work off your debt, or you get destitute under the way that we do things now.
Yep. Yes, the current method is not without its flaws, but it's definitely not perfect. It has its problems. It has its own built-in problems associated with it. Not that it's worse or better. It's just different. Yes.
Or you could trust God and wait for that unclean raven in the sky to drop you a piece of meat. That can happen too. You'll barbecue so it's clean.
Right. Any questions or comments so far about slavery? Yes, Deanne.
I hope there better not be.
I would be God's slave. I sit there and do my own thing. Yes, sir. I'll do what you ask me to do. I'll do it well. As opposed to, no, I am my own master. Leave me alone. What happens to me if I leave me alone? Look outside. They're all over the place.
Yeah.
It's called human beings. We do our own thing all the time. Are we right? Most of the time, no. We usually screw up. Being my own master, I fail. Being God's servant, I can succeed. So yes, there is slavery in the kingdom. A lot of it. Sorry, Deanne, go ahead.
I was just going to say that Heavenly Father's way is the best way to be in slavery because he cares and loves us, unlike mankind.
Who doesn't care.
Who wants to dominate and beat down.
Yes, yeah. So, again, slavery, when you were a servant to God, wait, are you a slave to God now? Yeah. So are you his slave? Yes. Will you continue to be his slave, meaning his servant, continually after you die and you resurrect, all the good stuff? Are you continue working for him? God willing, yes. We'll say it again.
What about when
I'm still slave? No. Well, in a manner of speaking, yes. But... Also, no, that there's more than just the bride in that story. The bride and Messiah Who all is there at that wedding? There's the bride, obviously. There's a groom. Right? There's the father. He's there, too. Who else is there? Friends of whom? Which friends? There's lots of them. Both. There's friends of the groom. G-R-O. Yep. And there's friends of the bride. Now, these are included. The wedding guests, we call them. Am I part of this one? Or this one? Or this one? I don't know. You may be. What does it say? What is the bride? The bride is, as the Bible says, is Jerusalem. That is the bride.
You mean the city is the bride?
Metaphorically, yes. It's the metaphorical city of Jerusalem, which is his temple, his dwelling place, his home. It is a replaced, yes, it comes down the same spot. That's as the Bible instructs you many times over and over and over again. It repeats itself. The bride is Jerusalem coming down. The Jerusalem coming down from the city is a bride adorned for her husband. Remember that part in Revelations? It's Jerusalem we referred to. Who all is invited? A lot of friends who aren't the bride, but they are still invited to the wedding. They're still there. They're friends of the groom, friends of the bride. They're still invited. They're still attaching themselves to their friends, the groom, Messiah, and their bride, his bride, which is a compilation of a bunch of people. They're still there too. So which one do I belong to? I don't know. Which one am I striving for? That's my business, not yours. Which one are you striving for? That's your business, not mine. Make sense? You can be any one of these three. You don't want to be the other one. Who's the one outside?
The stranger.
Who says, God who? Yeah, they don't belong. The outsider. What? You can, bridesmaids are clearly the friends of the bride. So, the outsider, who's part of the outsider? As the Bible instruction in Revelation talks about that. Who's the outsider? Who does not really get to go in? It tells you that a whole bunch of places. Yeah. It says, is not allowed in. It says, where is that? Yeah, 21 somewhere. There it is. Over 21 verse 8. The cowardly, the unbelieving, abominable, murderers, sexual immoral people, sorcerers, idolaters, liars shall have their part in the day of death. They belong in there. They can't belong in here. So the outside are all those categories. Am I outside? I sure as heck hope not. We don't want to be outside. So whether or not God says, Daniel, you're part of the bride, or no, Daniel, you're just a friend of the groom, or no, you're just a friend of the bride, I'm fine with it. As long as I make it in. I'm okay with that. Do I want to be one of them in particular? Sure. Am I going to be there? I don't know. I don't want to be the outsider who doesn't get to go. Does that make sense? Okay. So we had their hand up. Who it was? Larry.
Well, I have a quick question on a capture. That had to be outside of the community, didn't it?
The captured, yes.
You couldn't capture another.
You can't capture another Israelite. It had to be a stranger, like a Syrian or an Egyptian, or so a different biological descendant of somebody else.
Talked about yet? Maybe you're going to get to it. Is the Redeemer?
I wasn't talking about slavery at all today. That wasn't part of my topics. It is. In this process of the 6 years, you can go free and such. I'm going to erase this kosher salt thing because you don't need that anymore.
What was the point of all of that?
People asking questions. I'm answering the questions. She said that she didn't want to be a slave. She wanted to be the bride. Well, she may or may not be the bride. I don't know. But are any of these people slaves? Well, what does a friend do? A friend helps the bride and serves. Then the bride, as a slave, what does the bride do to her husband?
Prepares.
And what does she do for him after they're married? It does all the work that to maintain what's needed. So is she still serving? Yes.
Yeah.
Are the friends still serving? Yes. So are you still a slave? Yes. Who are you a slave to? The groom? Or, and so you could also argue, the father himself. So you're still a slave. It's just, it's not, we use the term slavery as someone who is a unwilling servant. These are all willing servants. They're all wanting to be there. Anyway, let's go back. Where was I? Somebody asked a question about Redeemer. E-A, I forgot how I spelled Redeemer. It's close. They're all E's. There's no A in it. Okay. Thank you. Redeemer. Yes, you can be redeemed. A slave can be bought free again. Let's pretend a slave, I borrowed the $5 million from Joe, and I paid him $4 back, and they sold me. Well, the person who buys me can do one of two things. I can work for them, or they can just pay my debt and set me free. Both are acceptable. There's also a third way, which we'll talk about in a minute. So in each of these ways in which you get free. So let's say somebody comes along, my great-great-granduncle, who's, I've never met him, he's probably dead, comes to Joe and says, Joe, how much does he owe you? Well, it's just shy of $5 million. That says, I'll pay the debt. I'll pay the $5 million. The court says, oh, the debt's been paid. Daniel, you're no longer sold. You're free to go. That's a redeemer's job, to come along and pay the debt that's owed. It has to be relative. Can't just be, well, that's not true. That's not fair. Anyone can redeem you financially. Not everyone can redeem you from mistakes. There's a difference. So anyone can redeem you financially. I owe $5 million to Joe. Not everyone can redeem you from mistakes. So let's say I hit Joe and broke his arm. Both is a metaphor. Both can be, depending on how you want to word it, you can word it either way. This is how I word it, how I view them. Because it makes life simpler in my own personal simple head. So redeemers, you can be purchased or paid debt. The demon can just pay the debt off and set the person free. They can do that. And any relative does that or can do so such things. Or a person can pay for the crime. Whatever I did, so-and-so else decided to pay for the crime to do it. Either one are still acceptable. Now, how does someone pay for a crime versus pay for a debt? What's the punishment? If I borrowed $5 million from Joe, spent it all, I don't have the money to pay for it, court orders be sold, and somebody else comes and say, hey, sell me instead. I'm worth more. What'd they do? They traded themselves for my place, so they paid for my crime by taking my place instead. So anyone can do that, but this is supposed to be, the payment crime is supposed to be someone who actually knows you, not some random stranger. So Messiah did this. And how did he do it? What does that mean to die for someone? He gave his life for ransom, but what was he when he did it? We'll discuss this. The Messiah, right, that was the process which he went through, correct. In paying for the crime, he was innocent. That's a key point. He died, he had to be innocent, but he was not guilty of his own sins. Innocent. Traded himself. He became what we call, in our biblical vernacular, he became our sin offering. That's what he was. So he died as if he was our sin offering. When God said, you offend me and you have to have a sin offering for whatever offense you've done, can you say, well, I'm sorry. Is that good enough, God? No. He didn't say, everybody, make yourself feel sorry. What did he say? It's a sin offering. Someone's going to pay for this. A crime has been done. Someone is going to pay for this. Whatever it may be. So what does it do? Well, I could offer a goat. Here, God, here's a goat. Here's a sheep. Here's this or that other thing. And I'm going to go sin once you turn your back, because I don't really care. Did that do anything? Of course not. So what did Messiah do as the innocent lamb, also as the goat, same time for atonement coming up soon? He is that sin offering. As your Bibles mistakenly record, he became sin for us. No, he didn't. The statement is, he became a sin offering for us. Your Greek translations, most of all, dropped the word offering because it made it sound too biblical-like, and just kept the word sin instead. It's the phrase that he became our sin offering for us, not our sin for us. You can't make a sheep sin. I sin, sheep, you're now the sinner. The sheep's eating grass. He doesn't care what I say. He won't even listen to me. Are you going to feed me more? Go away. You can't make the sheep sin. You can't become sin. However, it can pay for my sin. That's the difference. So he became not sin for us, became our sin offering for us. That's how he did it. Which is, he stepped in place of our crime. I'm redeeming him this method. Instead of them dying, I'm dying in their place. Does that make sense to the Redeemer? Okay. Any other questions? I haven't talked about anything what I wrote down today.
Redeemer is because he's our brother.
Yeah, he's supposed to love you.
Yeah.
If it's some stranger who doesn't care about you, well, one, why are they going to want to redeem you? Because you're a nobody. But the whole idea of a friend or a fellow or someone who is your brother is supposed to have a relationship. I want this person free. It's supposed to be your brother. Right. Which is exactly what he's supposed to be. You wouldn't do this for a stranger, would you? Who you don't even know, never met, didn't care about. Who you wouldn't even know if they even are have any remorse for what they've done. They might say, yes, I go do it again. Does that encourage you to say, yes, I'll stay in your place? No, it doesn't. But somebody who you love and knows you, the idea is that you have they know your intent and your heart behind it, that this payment actually is worth something. Otherwise, why bother? Move on to somebody else who does care. Make sense? Two hands up. Go ahead, Dan.
I'm asking if that's what he meant when he said, you don't always get forgiven because you're not understanding. Like, this just hit me like it. I just finally understood that Yeshua was a sin, became offering. Our sin offering.
Right.
So if we make a mistake, but we're
Everyone
not
does.
Really intent on fixing it.
Right.
And we ask for forgiveness. That's what you meant when you said we don't always get forgiven.
Right. Because if you had, okay, I've raped 4 people, killed 17, and ate breakfast this morning because I was bored. And I say, okay, God, I believe in Jesus. You forgive me. Is it meaningless? Or is it meaningful? It's empty. It means jack. It means nothing at all. However, if I made a mistake, I tried not to, I screwed up. Oh, crud. I didn't mean to do that. Please forgive me. What does that mean? You're working on it. You're trying. Right. The first example, which is obviously absurd, it was designed to say, all right, his death and death for my sins, I am making his death unimportant, insignificant, a common thing. When a sacrifice was meaningless, because I made it meaningless by trying to apply it to myself, I have absolutely no desire to change at all. I'm a ruthless killer or rapist. But if, on the other hand, I'm actually striving to follow God's instructions written here, and I make a mistake, I say, God, I need you to help me with this sin offering that is owed that I can't pay. That's a different story. Now his death means something to me. I can say that, yes, I believe in Messiah, not by just words, but I can actually truly mean it when I say he died for my sins. Not because I don't care, but because I really need somebody to do it because it's my head on the block otherwise. Does it make sense? So you could have him die for your sins and it not mean anything, and it'd be worthless to you because you didn't actually change. You don't care. It doesn't make any difference to you. You aren't truly believing or relying upon him. You're just using the words that are written down, spitting out a formula that says, okay, God, forgive me, blah, 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 let's move on, let's go do it again. It's worthless then. Make sense? Don't make his offering worthless or common. It's a big deal. Yes?
I'm not really sure if I'm asking this correctly. So during the time of the temple, and I come and I bring my sin offering, I present it to a priest, right? Is at what point is there more steps after I present it to the priest? And the kind of sub question is, am I relieved of my sin when I give that sin offering to the priest, or does a priest have to present it to the Father?
There's two things that occur with every sin offering a person brings, whether you bring it for your family, whether you bring it for your whole town, or just yourself, makes a difference. The same things occur the same way. A sin offering is a style or a muted form of an atonement offering, right? An atonement offering is the grander version. Which is the whole idea where the sin offering comes from, is the atonement picture. What's the atonement offering? What do they do when someone has to be atoned for a sin? Well, obviously you just bring the animal. Whatever the animal is, based upon who you are, what sin you've done, what you can afford to cover, because for various reasons, I won't go into the details behind it. But there's certain things you must do with it. One, if it's your atonement offering, your hands are on it. Hold it. I'll explain. Hands on it. What does that mean? No offense. Hand on usually the head, yeah. Hand on it, and you are verbally saying why this one's being killed on your behalf. And where's the priest? Right here sitting next to you. So the priest hears every word you say. And what's happening also? The guy over here has his offering. Priest sitting next to him. One over here has his offering. There's a lot of them along the way. That's the idea of the atonement offering. It's a hands-on process. You put your hands on it, you are confessing what this atonement is for. Let's say you have 10 crimes that you need atonement for. And I'm going to list 9 of them because I want everybody to know about the 10th one. What does that mean?
What now?
I have 10 crimes to pay for, to make atonement for. I only list 9 of them out loud. I don't want anybody to know about the 10th one because that's really embarrassing. What happens? The atonement becomes worthless. Your sin offering is garbage. It means nothing. You're still not forgiven. So it's a big deal when you do your sin offering, you confess everything you did on this animal that's dying on your behalf. It's not, don't leave stuff out. Don't drop things or forget them, conveniently. The idea is, it's all there. So each offering individual does this. The full atonement offering is a little bit more elaborate. It has a few more details to put on it for priests or leaders, mostly priests, mostly leaders that are affected for a whole community, a whole nation. They have a different, not different, it's more stuff put upon it. Along with the atonement offering, they also have a few other offerings of, I forgot them all. I have to go back to Leviticus. There's a few other offerings to go with other atonement offerings too. I'm sorry, say it a little louder. Okay.
Sin offering, or is our atonement, or both, or...
Alright, so let's break this up a little bit more thoroughly. I'm going to skip my entire section of those questions here. Okay, so Messiah died. So in his death, what was he? He was called the Passover Lamb. And the method by which he was killed is loosely similar to how you would kill a Passover lamb at the time which he died. So, Messiah's death was a Passover lamb sacrifice. In the Passover lamb, what do we know about Passover in general? It is a, I'll save you from your sins and you did nothing. Ah, it is. You do nothing. Passover is you are not, you can't save yourself. So, Passover is different than atonement, which is, we'll discuss this. Passover is different than atonement. The Passover lamb is the salvation to save you. And you stand aside. Get out of my way. Let me do it. Your actions are meaningless to this salvation. The Passover is saving you. You do nothing. I.e., just watch. Because is salvation through works? No. It's a gift. So is Passover through works? No, it's a gift. Difference. Hebrews talks about another aspect of this. The part that is through works called atonement. Passover is what he died for, but he also was a form of atonement in a spiritual sense. Not a physical one yet, but a spiritual one. Spiritual atonement, which we read up here, spiritual version. What's it mean is the spiritual atonement versus the Passover.
Don't do anything.
The Passover, we do nothing. We just stand by and watch. It's salvation. Atonement has nothing to do with salvation. It's not a saving thing. To say the sins you did. Atonement is what you did. Oops. Passover is, I don't know what I did wrong. I don't know how I'm going to pay for this. I don't know anything about it. God, just help me. That's Passover. Atonement is, God, I learned, I read the book, oops, I know better than this. That's atonement. That's your actions, where your actions come into play. So atonement is action-based. Your actions matter in atonement. That's what it's for. It's for the ones who know better. The ones who've been educated, who are aware of what God said to do versus what who don't know anything about it. So the salvation, as Moses pointed out, everyone, stand aside and just watch. Moses said that. Stand aside, just watch. Salvation's not from you. Just watch. Atonement is the exact opposite. You bring your offering up. You lay your hands. You openly confess everything you've done wrong because you know what they are. And confess you're going to do something better. You're not going to repeat your mistakes. And then after you, if your heart has been examined and God says, yes, I believe you're going to do this. This is true. You're being honest about this. I will then accept your offering of atonement, your hands-on sacrifice, and your actions should improve. The idea is I'll do better next time. These are two different functions. They're two different categories. They mean different things. All right? The atonement has nothing to do with your salvation. It doesn't matter. It's not a part of it. Atonement is, I know better. I'm aware of what's going on. Now, but yeah. The Passover is, it's strictly, you don't know what you're doing. I'm going to do this for you, and we'll talk about it later. Make sense? When we finish talking about it, then you'll come to me at atonement, and we'll discuss. After we've talked about this. Make sense? There's two different ways. Passover, I'll do this, we'll discuss. After we discuss atonement, you come to me now. Now that you're aware of what's going on. The two different, they both have their own symbols, similar sacrifices. Messiah did them in different ways. He did this one physically, obviously dying. This one he did in a form, a spiritual form. Mind you, in the atonement explanation, which we'll get into when atonement gets here, Yom Kippur, it talks about the goats and the ones being killed, the ones being cast off and run away after the wilderness. The idea behind that is that your sins are taken away from you to where, ideally, you can't sin anymore. That's this... Yes, the high priest too. He's doing this process too. Yeah, high priest. The priest who's standing when you offer your offering, he's listening to everything you're saying. Well, Messiah is your high priest. He's there with your offering, your confessions. He's listening to everything you're saying. He already knows what happened. You have to express it. Okay, I understand what I'm doing here and why I'm doing it. So it makes sense how this process works. Any questions about this? Okay. I missed my entire Torah section.
I didn't understand.
That's okay. Yeah, forever. Well, I listen to myself and I choose to tune myself. I tune myself out after a while. Yeah, took you notes to you, right? I got 10 minutes left. I won't go through even 5% of this, but that's okay. It's useful, I hope, to somebody. But there's other things I want to point out to you, which I already mentioned briefly a little bit during this conversation. No, I don't. You couldn't read my notes. I can't read my notes. So I can't pass my notes out. I have to read them 3 times to figure out what's going on. Highlights. I'll do the highlights because I can't do the details. Yeah, summary. Summaries real quick, like 4 sentences. Summarize the whole thing. Deuteronomy. This was chapter 11, verse 26 through 16, 17, which we started out with that didn't get through. Let's see here. I'm going to skip a whole bunch of stuff. Alright. Brief run. The latter half of chapter 11, pretty straightforward. Listen to God and do well. The latter half of chapter 11, as he's concluding, this is a blessing and a cursing. This is an important concept in your Bibles. Never, ever, 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 ever forget this. As long as you live, never forget this. This is a philosophy that God established from Adam and Eve onward and repeats up over and over and over and over and over again. Ever, always, always remember this. There are two ways of life. Blessing and cursing. The only two ways there are. Which one are you going to choose? Blessing. All right. Philosophy that covers the entire Tanakh. Two ways of life. Choose the blessing one. There's the Tanakh. That's the entire Bible in a nutshell. All right. Remember that. So, in Christianity, when Christianity came along about 50 years after Messiah died, about 50 to 60, longer than that, actually. Well, you know, there was an article written before that, written in 120 AD. So about, well, it was 90 years after he died. Well, 85, whatever it was. 85 to 90 years after Messiah died, Christianity came up with a new philosophy that said there are three ways of life. There's the blessing, there's the cursing, and then there's obeying me. Not me, Daniel, but obeying what the instructions are. So they became the third way. I'm not saying they're right, it's what they did. So the ways of life, God said there's two. There's blessing and there's cursing. What does the blessing require of all of us? Obedience. So I'm going to discuss the two ways for now. So there's obedience. Obedience to what? Obedience to Torah. What does that include? What does that mean? Obey Torah. What does that mean to anybody?
Well,
it's a book.
You read the Torah.
You read it. And apply. That's a good way of doing it. Now, when you screw up, make mistakes, it's still in the Torah what you do. You apply these corrections to the screw-ups you did, right? Obedience is pretty simple. When you do the Torah and instructions God gave us and said, this is forever and ever and ever, what does it produce? Blessings, life, to live. If you do not obey, do not listen to, not follow, what does that lead? For not... How many of you, I have two, so raise your hands, have screwed up? How well did it turn out for us?
Not very good at all.
Not so good. So, when I screw up and I don't fix it, this is a screw up of a non-fixing screw up, I just screw up and choose to continue on my life, does it bless us? No, it doesn't. When we screw up, the screw up is always there. It never just vanishes, goes away. When we screw up and we say, oops, God, let me fix that, what happens then? You actually have the opportunity to live a blessing. Is he going to bless screw ups? How many of you bless your children for disobedience?
I don't.
How many of you bless your children for obedience? We do. So what? If God is like our parent, if he's going to teach us like we teach our kids, there's no difference. Is he going to bless us for obedience or disobedience?
He's going to bless us
for obedience. Now, is he going to recognize, like every parent does, kids make mistakes?
Yes.
So what does he do about that? Let's fix this, sweetie. Sit down, we'll have a conversation. What we have to do to repair this mistake. So obedience doesn't mean I don't screw up. Obedience is when I do screw up, I follow his instructions and fix it. Address what needs to be done. It's pretty basic. That's just how the process works. Any parent, all of us be thrilled. A kid say, Mom, Dad, I screwed up. Can I do this to fix it?
Yeah.
How many of us get the can I do this to fix it? I never get that. You got that once? A couple times. We never get the voluntary, can I fix it this way?
Yeah,
it never happens. It's always that I just want to get away with it. It's never that I can fix it. So I never get the I fix it part. But God wants the can I fix it part. He wants that process. That's in part of the obedience to Torah. So, okay, let's continue on. A couple minutes left. Okay. I could have just bastardized this terribly. Okay. Chapter 13. Actually, one thing I want to do about chapter 12 before I leave it. Verse 4, chapter 12. Look at that really closely. Verse 4 of chapter 12. My verse 4, I think it's yours too. You shall not do this, Lord your God. Rather, only the place he shall choose among you shall cry, bless his name, that you shall seek out his presence, come and come here. Also read verse 30 and 31, the same chapter. Beware for yourself, lest you be attracted after them, and they have been as they've been destroyed before you, and lest you seek out their gods, saying, how these nations worship their gods, even I will do the same. You shall not do so, Lord your God. Everything that is an abomination to the Lord your God, he hates. have they done to their gods, even their sons and daughters they've burned to the fire of their gods. Repetition is a great way of teaching. What does he not want us to do? Don't do what they do to him. Pretty simple. Don't do what they do to him. Step 12. I erased this part. In a nutshell. Well, it continues on to 13 as well. So, loving God, there's two ways of life. We'll get to the third way that Christianity did later, but I don't think we'll get to it today. I'm running out of time. In chapter 12, the continuing on with the two ways philosophy is that your offerings, what you offer to God, and the way which you offer them, do them according to His instructions, not somebody else. God's way, not ours. How many of you offer offerings? How many of you offer offerings? A whole bunch of them. Lots of good kinds. A lot of offerings. Let's see here. I'll just rattle off a few of them since we're already here. How many of you praise God? How many of you sing to God? How many of you, well, in my case, family case, dance to God? How many of you pray to God? How many of you bless God? How many of you offer food to your community in God's name? How many of you offer your resources to the community or to God in His name? So, how many of you offer to God? Everybody does, right? Or nearly. That's the point. So, when you offer God, offer His offerings in His way, not ours. So don't mix them up with the other ways that people offer their gods, offer their worship services. For example, which talks about the prophet who misleads you on purpose for his own personal gain. Don't mix your worshiping and the way which you offer God His offerings with someone else's twisted or altered way of worshiping. So, I may sing to God and love Him and do all this great stuff on Christmas Day. What did I just do? I took my offerings and offered them my way. What did God say? Don't offer them the way that any other God does it. You do it God's way, not man's way. Because anything that's not God's way is man's way. Does it make sense? Yes. You've heard this statement, you don't allow the appearance of sin. And also don't allow your brother to stumble by watching what you do, by eating food offered to idols, right? That's recorded in... I forgot the address. Romans 14, thank you, Romans 14. It's recorded there, so don't do that. Well, if you do those things, what have you done to your brother? You've hurt him. You've altered his perspective, his way. So if I've got a brother next door to me looking at me, oh, well, you're dancing to God on Christmas. Oh, I should too. Christmas must be okay because you're doing it. Oops. What did I just do? I now misled my brother in God's name to do something that he wasn't supposed to go do. Oops. He said, don't do that. Don't do it my way. Do it God's way. His method, His style, His instructions, all my offerings. Whether I'm praising God, whether I'm blessing God, whether I'm doing, communicating, praying, whatever it may be, do it in God's way, not my way. Make sense? So His offerings, make sure they belong to Him. You're giving to Him, not somebody else, and contaminating them in your own fashion. Make sense? That's the nutshell of chapter 12. Chapter 13, don't defile your worship of God, which is also tied to chapter 12. Your worshiping of God is the method by which you do it. Is important. So I mentioned already the false prophet who misleads you or entices you to go astray. That's taking my offerings with the example I gave from chapter 12. In chapter 13, it talks more explicitly about what you're doing and other people around you watching you do them. And it misleads them as well. So chapter 12 and 13 are tied together on purpose. So your offerings and your worship of God are tied together. Don't screw them up and defile them. Chapter 14. Don't defile your body. Your body. It starts out, don't cut yourself, don't make balls between your eyes, you're a dead person, you're a holy people to God. Why is that? Verse 9, the very first verse, 14, explains it all. You are children of your God. You are sons of God. What does that mean to be a son of God? Not, we're not referring to Messiah himself. He is our example of a son of God, what a son of God looks like. What is it, if we're to be sons of God, what are we supposed to look like? Act like him. Peculiar, strange, but act like him. Pretty straightforward. Act like him. Did he cut himself or bald himself or did he make tattoos or anything else he wanted to do? What did he do? Did he do any of that stuff? No. Did he defile his body at all? No. He did his best to avoid all those things. Your body that God gave you is his too. It's built in his image. So act like it. That includes what you put in it. Did Messiah eat pork chops?
No.
No. Did he go fishing for lobster?
No.
Probably not. Unless he wanted a personal pet. Unless he was a pet. Hey, I don't know. What you put in it is also a defilement of the item, of you, which is of your body. So, no, the outside, cutting, shaving, tattooing, kicking, breaking, that's the outside. Don't do that. On the inside, what you shove down your mouth, don't do that either. Both defile you. Will Messiah add? What comes out? Watch that too. Your tongue. Because our minds really think their own thing regardless of what we eat. I could be eating pork chops, but if my mind says, I hate you, guess what? That's worse. Your mind's pretty bad. What happens with your mind when you think things over and over and over and dwell on them again and again and again and convince yourself it's true? It comes out this. What does that do? It defiles you. It defiles everybody around you who heard you. So what goes in's important, what God instructed in here. What comes out, what Messiah said, hey, that's important too. Because he didn't defile his body, which means he didn't defile his speech, because speech is part of us. That's how we communicate. It's part of our body. It's what we sound like, how we speak, how we talk to people. That's part of us too. It's still attached. It's still part of the body process. But what you say is just as much a part of you as what you eat is. Make sense?
So you have to take it without captive.
Yep. Control them all. I'm flying through this pretty quick here. So forgive me if I'm skipping tons of important things, which I am. Judges 15. Yeah. Don't defile your brother. Defile your brother. Loans, debts, all those details. Yeah, consider them important too. So 15 in a nutshell is your brother, how you deal with brethren. The one thing I want to point out to you, which is important, that chapter 15 does Deuteronomy that Exodus didn't do.
What?
In the book of Exodus, Exodus 21 discusses the detail, the first part of it, details of selling your child and how the slave goes free and all those details. Exodus 21 talks about how you treat the woman differently than you do the man. The man goes free up 6 years, the woman did not. The woman was sold as a daughter. It says the father sold the daughter. It's not her own crimes or her own debts. He sold her, and the person who buys it has to do with gives it to as a bride, to a slave or to his daughter, son, or whoever it may be, she doesn't go free. Well, in this one, if you note, which is important, it says in verse 12 of chapter 15, if your brother a Hebrew man or a Hebrew woman. So in this Deuteronomy, we have a different or an additional instruction, which is distinct from Exodus's instruction. Some will argue, look, it's a conflict. Sort of. It's called a judgment moving to decree. We talked about judgments previously. What is a judgment? Exodus 21, the first few verses, discusses a judgment, which is when this circumstance happens, this is how you will handle it in the case of a father selling a daughter. In Deuteronomy 15, it changes that. So the judgment, it's similar to it, yes. And judgment, the judgment in Exodus 21, let's go there and read it real quick, just so we're all familiar with what it actually says. So Exodus 21, if I jump to Exodus real quick, it's somewhere in here. It's important to understand how judgments and decrees are used. These the ordinances you should replace. This is Exodus 21. Before them, you buy a Jewish bondsman. This is a male. He worked for you 6 years. The seventh year, you should go free for no charge. This is verse 3 of chapter 21. If he shall arrive by himself, he shall leave by himself. He is the husband of a woman. His wife shall leave with him. If his master will give him a woman, if she bears him sons or daughters, the wife of the children shall belong to her master, and he shall go out by himself. The bondsman says, I love my master, my wife, my children. I shall not go free. His master shall bring him to court. He shall bring him to the door of the doorposts. His master shall bore through his ear with the awl. He shall serve him forever. If man will sell his daughter as a bondswoman, she shall not leave like the leave-taking of the slaves. If she is displeasing the eyes of her master, who should have destined her for himself, he shall assist her in her redemption. He shall not have the power to sell her to a strange man, for he had betrayed her. And if he had designated for his son, he shall deal with her according to the rights of the young women. If he shall take another in addition to her, he shall not diminish her food, her clothing, or her marital relationships. If he does not perform these three to her, she shall leave free of charge without payment. That's instruction in Exodus 21. Deuteronomy 15 adds to this. So in 21, what happens to the girl? What's her function as being sold? As a maidservant. And what happens if the father sells her? What's he doing for her? What's going to be her future at this new ownership? No one knows yet, but she's designated as Exodus 21 points out, as a wife or intended wife for someone. Talks about the mother, or sorry, a woman, if she's given to a slave, she stays, he goes free. It talks about also, if the master bought her for his own use, his own wife, and he chooses to not like her anymore, she goes free. If for her son, son doesn't want her to choose against her, she goes free. A lot of things make people free for the wife process. Exodus 21 talks about a man selling daughter. No, you can. Maybe she would die otherwise. She's too young. Who knows? I don't know what the deals are. Maybe. We don't know. This is the instance in which he sold her. Now, he sells her for a period of time if she's a servant. But in this case, Exodus 21 talks about sell her with the intention of wife to someone. That's the intent. As Exodus 21 talks about the wives before, in that section of wives are addressed and following it, of course, as well. Deuteronomy 15 does not talk about wife selling. Deuteronomy 15 is another judgment discussing bondwoman. It is sold to you, she's purchased or buy. How would you buy a bondwoman? This is not a man selling his daughter. This is a bondwoman who is not a wife selling herself or being sold. Maybe, maybe not. The bondwoman is just like the bondman who sells himself or has to be sold. It's a court order. This is not a dad selling his daughter. This is a court order bondwoman being sold. All right. How would she get herself sold by the court instructions? Take a guess. How would a man get himself sold by? Why would she get sold? Because she owes some debt, something she did on her own. This is now a crime she's paid for. This is how you deal with this woman. So in the case of X 21, talks about a girl and how this process works. She's being sold, intended as a wife. This Bible is not being sold intended for a wife. She's being sold because there's a debt applied, or something that she owes, the court has ordered her sale. Which means she's already of age. She's at least 20 years old. All her debts are her own, not her dad's. Her dad can't say, hey, 22-year-old daughter, I'm selling you. Say, good luck. And she can walk away. Because she's her own woman. She has her own choices. So the bottom line here is this is an adult female versus a minor who's being sold, to, intended for a wife for somebody. So this in Exodus 21, referring to probably a mid-teenager, 16 to 19 age range, being sold, intended for a wife for somebody. In this instance, the bondwoman being bought for court order, she has her own debts, which means she's at least 20 or older, and she's being sold for the six-year period of time, or she can go free. These are differences. All these applied are as judgments, not decrees. She's a laborer. Yes, she's a laborer. She's a worker. So judgments versus decrees. It's important to remember the differences. A judgment can get moved to a decree. A decree, an instruction, a command. Or not command, but a mitzvah. You will do it this way. It can be moved that way. And what was done? I don't know if you noticed it or not. Exodus 21, the man goes free after 6 years. Pays nothing. What's Deuteronomy 15 say? You pay him. There's a difference. So Deuteronomy 15 has added a new judgment, a new instruction. Well, it says you go free, chapter 15. It talks about the seventh year goes free. When you send him away, verse 13 of chapter 15, you shall not send him away empty-handed. Adorn him generously with your flocks, your threshing floor, from your wine cellars. The Lord your God has blessed you, so shall you give him. When you were a slave at Egypt. So you're paying him. You're giving him lots of supplies. Exodus 1 does not have this instruction about paying him anything. It's not there. So we have two explanations, one in Exodus 21 and one in Deuteronomy 15, essentially saying almost the same thing. Deuteronomy 15 adds an additional judgment upon it, which is you shall pay him. All right? Is that wrong? No, it's not.
Intended for that to happen, but it wasn't happening, so it had to be put in.
It can be, because you were a slave in Egypt. When people came out of Egypt, what did God have them do to the Egyptians first?
They plundered.
Looted them. They took everything, right? What were they doing? They're being paid for their service for however many hundreds of years they were there. So the bonds with the symbolism that Moses is pointing out to us, just like you were a slave in Egypt, this is how you were treated, how you got paid for the years of service and the lives that were lost. In this instance, when you release your slave, treat him the way you were treated, the way God had you get treated. So we have a judgment added on behalf of them because God freed them from Egypt in a particular way, which is you will be paying them to go through, to go free. So it's a judgment added on or tacked on or included that was not included originally. It's not about conflicts and details. It's about that judgments are arguable. They're discussionable. You can talk about them and decide what is a fair exchange for this event. That's what courts come from. That's why courts work their way. When a court orders someone being sold because they owe money, a court has to determine, is that a proper correction for whatever is done? Maybe it is, maybe it's not. The court decides. We call those judgments. The Torah is full of judgments too. There are lots of them. There are discussions about, all right, is this applicable? Maybe, maybe not. Decide and figure out, does it apply or does it not apply? Or should it be altered for this particular circumstance? So when we apply decrees and apply instructions and we get case laws, we have to determine, does it apply, does it not apply? Is this fair, is it unfair? Is it justified, is it unjustified? So when we're saying we're Torah observant as best we can, it's not that we're following to the exact syllable. It's we're applying the principles we learn from the Torah's instructions to this situation or this life scenario. We're trying our best to follow them as best we can, and we have case law or judgments to determine, is this correctly applying it, or is this poorly applying it? Does that make sense? So Torah observant doesn't mean you don't follow everything exactly. It means that you are applying what you know to what you can do and follow through with it. Does that make sense? It's important to understand the differences. We confuse, I confuse myself sometimes. Being with, so I see someone's Torah observant, but he looks different than the guy over here who sees Torah observant. One's wearing a tzitzit, and one's wearing a tefillin, and one's wearing a kippah, and this guy over here is not. Okay, well, are they both Torah observant? Maybe. I don't know. But they both can be. That's important. They both can be. They're applying what they understand the best they can with their instructions upon themselves, their situation, and say, okay, this is how it is justified. Does that make sense? Okay. I'm going to call it quits, because they're silly to continue on. Chapter 16 is about holy days, which are important, but I won't go through all the holy day cycle of chapter 16. The pilgrimage feasts. Any questions or comments? Because I'm out of time. Thoughts or opinions? All right, we'll close with a prayer then, if that's okay with you. Almighty God, our great Heavenly Father, thank you for our Shabbat, our time with you. Thank you for teaching us and helping us to follow you as best we can. Father, help us to be good servants, to follow what is right and what is fair, to apply what we know and what we do, to be good examples of your servants. You'll be able to use us, and we will be blessed because of you. Help us, Father, to follow the way which you set before us, that we may live and be blessed. We praise you and ask your blessing, Father, in Yeshua's name. Amen.
You've been listening to a discussion at Hallel Fellowship. If you would like to hear more discussions or if you have any questions, visit the website at hallel.info. That's hallel.info, hallel.info.